This is Leo Baybue with KTWH. This last week of November 2023, we have Wandering Nature News, post-Thanksgiving edition with Michaela Rice, naturalist at Gooseberry Falls State Park, and your host Leo here. Michaela, I hope you had a good holiday. I'm glad to see you in this kind of sharp cold spell that's getting our attention. We now know that fall isn't lingering as much anymore.
It's over.
It may be over, but a new season is just underway. I guess the meteorological winter starting point is December 1st anyway, which is right at the end of this week.
That's very fitting. Wind has been sharp and cold this week. We've been out. I've just been learning a little bit more about our tree cages that have been put out at Gooseberry probably for the last few decades, but they need to be inventoried. You know, obviously trees will grow up past the tree caging, and so the cages could be removed. Sometimes we want to put cages around trees that are getting hit really hard. So I've been going out this week in the mornings and following the CCMI crew around a little bit. They've been on site this week helping us out.
So in general, at Gooseberry Falls State Park, they're using exclosures or whatever, the cages that are up to 6 feet high, or do they extend them for some of the trees?
Some of our large exclosures are over 8 to 10 feet tall.
Okay. So not a strategy of using bud capping, say, for white pines. They just cage them.
Yep, caging to protect the outer branches and bud capping, I just don't think is quite, I don't know, it doesn't stay on long enough.
It can be a challenge, but I would note some of us, like myself, haven't done our bud capping for the season, and there's already some signs that the deer have been at them. Often it's tricky because the bud capping time that's ideal is right around firearm season, and depending upon how exposed you feel, you might want to wait till, okay, the firearm deer season is over and we don't have heavy snow cover. Probably have a few more days to get bud capping done, and it is certainly better than doing nothing. Just a heads up to folks that if you haven't thought of protecting your white pines, you can still do that. We're forming ice right now, Michaela. Any words to the wise about the thin ice that we have for a few weeks here?
Well, I know fishermen are probably anxious now that they see the ice is starting to form, but even inland, it doesn't seem like the ice is quite thick enough yet, so we still got to wait. It's just the surface that's starting to freeze right now, so very much be careful, especially around the edges of riverbanks and stuff, because you can just crack and slip right in.
Right, and I know some people will say, well, I believe that somewhere out there on that water body, there's 4-inch thick ice, and they say I can walk on that just fine, but to get to that strong ice, you may be putting yourself at great risk.
And the water is still moving under the ice, so that thickness changes, right, depending on the water current. So there's just no telling.
And if you're in a water system like some streams that have upwellings of springs, oh boy, all bets are off. I've had the pleasure at below zero to walk along a stream and fall in. And even though I was right on shore, there's nothing like 15 below zero weather to get you racing back to your car in time to not freeze solid.
Yeah, so you can actually open your car door because your hands are, you know, still working.
Exactly.
I'm going to send this to you, Leo, but there is a loon rescue group, and I saw a posting on Facebook. Because the ice came in kind of quick, you know, this cold spell, it was 30 degrees last week, 40 sunny the week before. It seemed like a lot of juvenile loons, just like the geese we've been seeing, they stayed in those open waters. There was green grass ditches last week. There was still some food around for these critters. So loons are at risk of getting iced in.
Well, I'm just surprised. And we talked several times about loons over the summer and into the early fall, and I thought that they would have been gone by like the early November.
Yeah, I think the majority of them are. There's just a few instances where like landowners or people who live on lakes are seeing a very small amount of loons that were still on the water.
Okay, and those that did stick around now could be in some trouble.
Be risk.
Okay.
Being iced in, like we said, because they just can't take off from those small areas of water.
Right. Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I didn't prepare you in advance. Sometimes we create homework assignments for you out of these questions, Michaela, is that with really solid ice up, it changes the landscape and the connectivity between habitat for some of our mammals. Their world changes. Those that used to be fishing those mammals that were fishing mm-hmm. in open water can't do that now. But boy, they animals can get around and make major river and lake crossings that weren't possible before. And just curious what you know about advantages and disadvantages of this time of the year for some of those predators and prey.
There's so many. Some of the ones I'm thinking of are, of course, like the canids that can cross ice to get to beavers or follow deer and smaller animals across the water. Other limitations. I mean, we were just talking about the beaver at Gooseberry. Apparently the lodge has gotten bigger over the last month, but presumably now that beaver will be probably under the ice. So they're limiting their movement, even though they could move. It's just getting too cold. Obviously, like eagles and birds that might be able to fish in open water, as that food source gets limited, now I see them on the roadways eating carrion and switching some of those foraging patterns.
And doing that kind of activity along the roadways leads you to think there might be some car collisions too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So not a benefit of the icing up for everyone. And I thought maybe that the beavers would use the frozen water to convey their cut vegetation, but they're probably changing their behaviors to the point where they're staying in the lodge more because they've already cached food. Is mm-hmm. that what will have happened?
Yep.
Then again, I was thinking, as well as the mammals, that in fact there are some birds, and I continue to come back to eagles, and I think you reminded me of geese, that need some open water mm-hmm. to stick around.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's why the geese weren't really leaving until, you know, you and I have seen big flocks the last week taking off. I think those signals, they had a lot of open water, a lot of vegetation. Geese do eat plant material. So some of that stuff has been much more available. And it seemed like they waited an extra month to take off, some of them. And then the turkeys is another bird I've been seeing a lot of. And I think that they're coming closer to habituated areas to look for food because those insects, the primary food source for them is now they're all dormant. And so they don't have that grub to eat.
Right.
And so now they're looking for fallen seeds, and that's where they're coming in and looking in lawns and for bird food, any type of food waste they'll also take advantage of because they're omnivorous. So,
right.
And they'll even eat acorns and other protein sources too, like nuts. But
so it's been quite a resurgence. I don't know the original range of wild turkeys, whether it included the North Shore and northern Minnesota in general, but we're acclimating and trying to accommodate them. And I think you were telling me that there are some rules of the road for learning what to do and not do around turkeys.
Yeah, so 1880 is when turkeys in Minnesota disappeared. And you're right, it was under kind of that coniferous biome that we talk about because it used to be so dense up here that turkeys did not really live probably north of the cities too much because that coniferous forest used to be really dense north of there.
Was not the right habitat for what they needed.
Correct. And so they need a little bit more grassy open areas. They actually roost in trees at night, but during the day they're out in the open eating grubs and seeds. They do, you know, better in kind of some of that open, more like savanna. Oakland is probably great for them because there's some trees, but open areas. And so, yeah, they were reintroduced into Minnesota in 1971. And now that human disturbance has spread all throughout Minnesota and more logging and some other practices have allowed turkeys to take advantage of some more habitat. But, you know, we talk about being animal wise here a lot. And so turkeys is one thing that I hear people kind of being afraid of them, just like geese, but they're not really going to hurt you. So and I've looked online too. I found this really interesting about not being intimidated by a turkey. Don't let them intimidate you. You don't want to become part of the pecking order. So when you see a turkey in your yard and you're thinking, oh, I don't want there to be 10 turkeys here next summer all defecating on my beautiful grass. So how am I going to prevent this? Well, you're going to go out there and you're going to charge out there and you are going to kind of show the turkey who's boss right away. Loud noises, yelling boo, you know, running at them with a garbage bag or something foreign could be enough to haze them away. If there's a group of them and you need to get a little closer, they recommend spraying them with a hose, taking a dog on a leash and barking at them. Intimidate them. They're not going to start charging you until they're comfortable with you, and they're likely not going to charge you unless it's mating season.
But they're only going to be comfortable with you if you've kind of allowed them to hang out for a bit, right?
Yes, that habituation, that relationship is actually allowing that turkey to be more confident in coming up and being dominant to you.
So you just have to, you know, it might be so fascinating to observe the turkey the first few times in your yard, but what you're saying is don't let them settle in because it'll probably be in the end worse for you and the bird.
Yeah, I'm not saying go chase a turkey off your lawn every time, but if they're coming in flocks, they're starting to come in, they're very habitual. If they start coming to your house at 8 o'clock every morning in a group, they're already starting to use your lawn as a loafing area. So that's when you'd want to step in, go out there and scare them away.
Occasionally you might have a lone turkey though, right?
Yeah,
and that might be a little simpler. If you have a turkey though that's associated with a flock, it's sort of like if you tolerate that turkey, the others will eventually follow.
Yeah, they could. They're very social. Right now they're in sex groups, so the males are hanging out together and the females are hanging out together.
Okay.
They're more likely to habituate now when they're looking for cover and for food.
I'm thinking about bird feeders in particular.
Absolutely.
They're
going
to hang out looking
for droppings,
right? Biggest
thing that they are going to come check out. So if you can keep some of those areas cleaner, as well as garbage as well, you know.
But because it's food, will they be more stubborn about not abandoning your homestead until you've really scared them off around food, around
a
feeder?
Yeah, I would think so.
So keep a rake handy by, by your bird feeder.
Yep, and one thing too is that if a turkey is going to charge you, they're going to come and they're going to peck at your your calf, your shin area. So if you have a broom or a rake to just kind of keep in between your legs and the turkey. And then if they do come off the ground, you just want to put your hand over your face to protect your face from their wings or their feet. Kind of just feels like you get hit in the head with the basketball if you really do get smacked with a wing. But that's the worst that's going to happen. I know, so, Leo's looking at me like,
no emergency
this
room
is
admissions?
This is bad for some people, but I've gotten like smacked in the wing, you know, by big wings more times than I can count, and I'm still here.
And I know I know that fewer of us have experience around turkeys, but in certain parts of the country, these are really nuisance events that become, you know, real community, like controversies about how we're going to manage turkeys in our downtown area. I don't know if you've read about some
They're large. They're attracted to reflective material. So during the like mating season or when Jake's and Tom's are kind of starting to figure out their hierarchy, they will go. And I've even seen females do it too. They see themselves in the reflection of your vehicle and they will peck your vehicle. So they can be damaging. Luckily, they don't really eat crops, but in terms of people's houses, there's some folks that really don't want their paint chipped off their car, you know?
Well, I'm never going to be accused of having a shiny enough car for a turkey to see their reflection, Michaela. That's why I was amused when you mentioned that. And those of you who are pretty fastidious at keeping your cars clean, watch out. Have the rake in the car.
But, you know, of course, we want to be respectful, too. But that habituation, you'll start seeing. It's like they literally know what time it is. They'll start coming around the same time every day. And that's kind of your signal to say, all right, maybe now it's time to step in and scare them away.
But it is a success story.
It sure is.
New species in the habitat of the Northland. And because we have so many other things that are struggling. So it's nice to hear about that. What about events going on in your world at state parks in the North Shore and your educational outreach and activities at the library? Are they still ongoing?
Yep. So I have a variety of programs going on in December. They alternate from kind of these interpretive walks at Gooseberry Falls and then at Split Rock. So, but just to highlight the ones that I have going on, I have some picnic flow interpretive walks this month at Gooseberry, and we're going to be talking just about the natural history of the lava flow and then why the Conservation Corps kind of, well, they use the Gooseberry River a lot for logging and development, and all that is showcased right by the picnic flow right on the shore. So I'll be doing a few programs about that in December. And these are all on the events calendar online. And then I'll be at Split Rock two Fridays to do Bob Stairs programs. I'll have a wildlife watching one because the grouse are still easy to see. Hopefully we'll have some tracks to look for at that time. And then I just want to announce my youth nature program at the Two Harbors Public Library on Friday, December 8th. And this is for all ages. We'll be talking about animals in winter and the changes that they go through. And that is at 11 a.m. Friday, December 8th.
11 a.m. and it's for a certain age window?
This one is for any kiddo like under 15 come.
And their curious adult could stand in the background.
Yes. All this stuff is relevant for anyone.
Got
so,
it. But you're really looking to get the youth exposed to these subjects.
Yep.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Any community art activities on the horizon?
Yes. So I have my adult community creations this month will be happening Monday, December 11th, 2 to 3:45 p.m. in the library meeting room.
Excellent.
And that's been going great. We've been having fun and making things. I collected more material the last few weeks, so keep it going.
And I guess we should have covered this before, Michaela, but people who forget what they heard on Wandering Nature News want to look up activities they can, aside from the public library events, which I believe are on the library website, they'll find the other events at Split Rock and Gooseberry on the state parks events pages.
Yep, it's called the events calendar for parks and trails. You can go in, you can select a specific park,
right,
and it'll show you all the events in that month.
Perfect. Anything else coming up this month leading up to the holiday and beyond?
Well, Jackie will be back with her birds at the end of the month, Friday, December 30th. So if you have folks in town, that is such a great thing. Literally, if you're 6 months old to 99, you will enjoy seeing a bird in person. And that's literally the range of people that come and see her and her birds.
Families are looking for neat outings the week between Christmas and New Year's. And I believe the 30th might be a Saturday.
It is. Yep. Okay. So come see Jackie at Gooseberry Falls.
What time would that be?
1:30 to 3:30. Come anytime.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Michaela. I wish you well. I think we're going to visit with you one more time before the holidays, if we can. We're working on a little forum about feral pigs.
Yeah, with my connections in Texas that just know so much about pigs because they've been in that state for much longer than they have been in the Midwest.
Right. And we're all going to have some apprehension going into this. So hopefully she'll help us to navigate the concern about another species that we haven't had to deal with yet. So thanks a lot, Michaela.
We'll see you next time.
And I'll see you on the radio. Thank you very much. That was Michaela Rice. She is with Gooseberry Falls State Park as the naturalist there. And this is Leo for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio.